On the what step?
Fifth.
Third step.
Third step.
Third? I thought, what's his name, did the fourth last week? Third? Okay, well, I'm wrong. Third step. I thought we were in the fifth step.
My name's Russ. I'm an alcoholic. I'm on step three tonight. It's nothing to be sorry about.
Third step.
Doesn't matter. It's good to be here. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I could do the fifth step. I mean, who knows what step I'll be on? You know, I mean, it doesn't really matter anyway. I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't. It's not a game changer. So it's good to be here. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 17th, 1981. And so I've been around here a little while, and it's a privilege to be asked to speak at an AA meeting. I was away for a few weeks, and I missed everybody, and I missed my groups in Miami. You know, I having traveled a bunch and been around for a while and been sober for a little while, I have different people I know all over the place, and I went to some great meetings in Napa Valley and Napa, California, and wonderful meetings in, well, actually, when I go to Los Angeles, I go to a few meetings in Pacific Palisades. I don't know if you know where that is, and there's a great group. If you're ever there at 6 o'clock in the morning, it'll be 9 o'clock for you guys. You want to go to the Coffee Bean in Pacific Palisades and hang out with the guys there before the meeting. They have a couple of really good meetings early in the morning. And so even though I've missed y'all here, this fellowship is alive and well. We got the same cast of characters. We've got your clones on the West Coast, you know. They're not as goofy as you guys, but, you know, they're good guys, too, over there. And so it's good to be back over here. I'm going to talk a little bit about the third step tonight, something that's near and dear to my heart. As a matter of fact, some people accuse me that every meeting I speak at, it's a third step meeting. So you might not notice much different about this meeting than any other meeting I go to. I had a guy who came up to me once outside of the call room, and he says, he came up to me, young guy, he was a brand new guy, you know, and he said, oh, you're Russell. He says, my sponsor told me I ought to hear you, you know, I ought to hear you speak or something like that. He says, but you talk too much about God. And, you know, that you want that. I was thinking, wouldn't that be a sort of nice thing to have on your gravestone, you know? I believe before I came to AA, I wasn't headed in that direction, you know? But that'd be a nice thing to have. He talked too much about God, you know? I mean, that's something to be accused of. And that's the deal. And you know, I have my own opinion. You understand? You all understand this is my opinion? You don't have to buy into it. You don't have to agree with it. It can piss you off. You can change it. It don't even matter. You know, I'm just going to, what I do with these things, I don't do a whole lot of preparation. I've been preparing for this meeting for 62 years. Yeah, let me tell you what I did for you guys to prepare for this meeting. I spent 31 years destroying my life. You know what I mean? Because I wanted to be able to share that with you. You know what I mean? So I could explain to you that deal. You know what I mean? And then I spent the last 30 years, you understand what I'm saying, in AA, reconstructing my spiritual life just so I could come here and give you guys this meeting, you know. And so probably I'm going to get to the real heart of the matter during the third hour of this talk, you know, somewhere along the way. But so I'm going to try to condense it all in like 40 minutes or something like that. And what I try to do is I try to share my experience. And it says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, right? Our stories are so important. They're very important. You know, it says at the end, it says the chapter to the agnostic and our personal adventures before and after make clear these ideas. And then it gives these ideas. And the ideas is that we're alcoholics and cannot manage our own. Here's the ideas. You know, they're called the A, B's, and C's. Everybody ever see them? They read them at this meeting. A, you know what's A? We're alcoholics and we cannot manage our own lives. Now, I'm going to get back. That's A, right? We all agree that's A? B, that no human power could relieve their alcoholism. We all agree that's B? Now, C, God could and would if he were sought. Did I get that right? That's not for me. You know, if you get pissed off at that, that's like you're going to have to write AA. You got to write New York. You know what I mean? I'm just saying that's the deal. You see, I'm going to talk about my experience, because I think that's valid. I can talk about my experience. And I'm also going to read some stuff from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is pure AA. And the reason why, thank God we have it in writing, because if we didn't have this in writing, then you would think that AA had something to do with the crap you hear at meetings. You would. You know, people talk like they know what they're talking about. They say stuff. They yell. I don't want to hear that God stuff. And, you know, I'm anti-Catholic. Or you hear all this stuff. And you might think it's 20 years down the road and people are saying all sorts of stuff. You might think that's recovery. You might think that's what recovery looks like. That's what AA looks like. That's what sobriety looks like. You might think that unless we had this book. And if you were bright enough to read this book and you understand that this is what we all agree on, this is what's been keeping people sober, you know, what A's like to do, because we're self-destructive in the stream and self-centered, is we like to get together and figure out how we can destroy ourselves using our best thinking, you know? You ever look back and say, I can't believe I was thinking that. Why did I do that? I can't understand. Using our best thinking, we like to destroy ourselves because we're pissed, because we're upset, because something bothers us, you know? You know, but we have this book. So we can check everything out in this book and say, well, you know, does it jive with this book? So what I like to do is talk about my experience, but also talk about this book. I want to read stuff in this book because I can be full of crap. I mean, I am full of crap. I'm an alcoholic, for God's sakes. But what I find has happened to me is the longer I'm in AA, and I've been in AA for a little bit over 30 years now, the longer I'm in AA, the more incredibly wonderful my life gets. And the more incredibly wonderful my life gets, the more I experience the joy of living in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more when I read the book Alcoholics Anonymous, what I do in my daily life and how I feel perfectly jives with what they're talking about in here. But you know something? The more it jives with what they're talking about in here, the more I realize it doesn't really jive with what's going on out here. I hear people talk in AA meetings. I hear the drama. I'm not putting down AA. I'm not putting down the fellowship. I hear the angst and anxiety and the people being ticked off and the hard feelings and all that sort of stuff. And then I read this and I read what we're supposed to be after. And I look at what alcoholism really is and what it sounds like and what it looks like. And I look at recovery and what it really is and what it sounds like and what it looks like. And some of the old timers, the few that make it to emotional sobriety. And all of a sudden, things become very clear to me as to what I want and what I don't want, and the sobriety I want to have and the sobriety I don't want to have. It just becomes pretty simple to me. You know, you just have to hang around a few years, and it also becomes obvious that even the most strident, no matter what you believe in, the most strident emotional person in Alcoholics Anonymous who believes he's absolutely right really doesn't mean much if you don't stick around. And you start watching who really sticks around and who doesn't stick around. Who are basically flash in the pans. They're around for 5 or 10 years, and then they're gone. You know, you just see stuff, you know? And so I just want to talk about my experience. You know, my sponsor once said, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will have walked away with an experience. You know what I mean? So, you know, so that's all I'm going to talk about. And one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to read some stuff from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, okay, for you all. And then I'm going to talk about... essentially, my experiences with the third step. So let me just, I picked out about 5 or 6 things. Now, the incredible thing is, this is a pretty powerful book. All these things that I'm picking out have sort of like a point. There's a pattern. You might notice a pattern to these things. They all have a point. Maybe you will, maybe you won't. I'm telling you, you're going to have to believe me you don't have to believe me, but I suggest to you that even though I'm picking out these 5 or 6 things, I could pick out 105 of these things. Because they're all over the book in different pages. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick out certain things from the beginning of the book to the end of the book because the theme is consistent. The theme of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is consistent. And the theme is that emotional sobriety and happiness and joy and freedom from alcohol as well as a whole lot of other symptoms. You know, it says unless and until an alcoholic accepts his devastating weaknesses, whatever that is, and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious and of true happiness he'll find none at all. You know, and I don't know about you, but I didn't start realizing what alcoholism was until I stopped drinking. You know, if you're an alcoholic and you're drinking, all you know about is drunk. You know, and you know, drunk is but a symptom of the disease of alcoholism. It's a powerful symptom. Drinking is a symptom, but our real disease centers in our mind, not our body. And you've been sober more than 18 months, and you haven't had a drink, but you're still crazy at times. You know what the disease of alcoholism is about. It's about being uncomfortable no matter what. It's no matter what's going on, somehow, some way, it all turns to crap in your hand. It's never good enough. It's about that feeling of restlessness, irritability, and discontentedness. It's about being lonely, ill at ease. With money, without money, it doesn't even matter about the circumstances. It's about somehow being so influenced by the stuff around you and the people around you and the world around you. It's about going through crises and melodrama and all this sort of stuff. Hey, you want to know what AA is about? Just listen to the fellowship in an AA meeting. Let's film it. You know, it's all like the movie. It's all like that TV show Intervention. It's craziness. And that's sobriety. That's us sober. Well, all sorts of bright ideas, right? But apparently what this book is about finding out that there is a God, having a relationship with God, and through that relationship realizing that God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. That's what it says, right? And that's a tough thing to do when the first thing an alcoholic says when he gets in here is, I'll tell you one thing, I ain't going to believe in God. And you know you can't punch it into him. You can't beat it into him. You can't force it into him. But I know what the book says. Now, I know if you're an alcoholic, you could read this thing and believe it says anything else other than what it says. God's mentioned 800 times or more. I'm not even talking about the pronouns. You know, him, you know, in this book. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. You know, from a spiritual standpoint, Bill Wilson said after the drinking, after relief of drinking, there's something, the next frontier is emotional sobriety. And that's what I really want. I want emotional sobriety. And what I realized is when it says their alcoholic life seems the only normal one, it's I look at it now in terms of my spirituality, my belief in God. There was a time in my life where I couldn't envision. Anybody ever have a time in life they couldn't envision life without drinking? Let me tell you something. How about 1 second before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous? I mean, it was like an hour before I decided. When I took the first, about an hour or 6 hours or a day, I mean, if you had come up to me and said, I can't even envision life without drinking. And then all of a sudden I blink my eyes, I wake up, and the next day I can't even envision taking a drink again. You know, isn't that the way it seemed to you? I mean, I know the obsession hangs on for a while, and you know, and the craziness hangs on for a while, and maybe for a week or two or three, but eventually you go in a relatively short period of time from not even envisioning ever not drinking. How could you not drink? How could I live without drinking? To all of a sudden going and saying, I can't drink. How am I going to live without? Yeah, I can't. Not only being fearful of drinking, but not even, you know, coming in here and says, I ain't never going to drink again. I can say, and all of a sudden it becomes possible. How does that change happen? I mean, do we all of a sudden get like real smart in like 24 hours? I mean, where does that come from? Where all of a sudden you go from darkness to, but isn't it true when you're in that alcoholic haze, and you're drinking like a fish, and you can't think of a life without drinking. And it's not only the drink, it's all the bullshit that's wrapped around the drinking. It's the friends, it's all your friends, it's the loneliness, it's the bar, it's the places you do. Your entire world is wrapped around drinking. Isn't it true that you can't even envision a life without drinking, no matter what's going on? I mean, the rest of the world is like going to work. The rest of the world is like raising kids. The rest of the world is like doing stuff that normal, decent people that are successful do. And then there's like you. Messing up and screwing up and people hating you. And I haven't spoken to my brother in 15 years. Or my mother and my father, they kicked me out of the house. And I'm facing this bench warrant and that bench warrant. If you're not talking about you, you're talking about your best friend or Charlie. And that seems perfectly normal to you. It's like normal. You don't even see you have a problem. And all the well people out there that are doing okay and successful, they're just like jerks. Yeah. And it says to them, to alcoholics, no matter how bad it gets, no matter how insane it gets, your insane life seems absolutely normal. Well, you know, that's true from a spiritual angle, too. Did you know that? I spent 30 years not believing in God. I spent 30 years believing that money would make me happy because sometimes I get money and I'd be happy. But you know what the problem is with getting money and getting having somebody give you money and being happy? The problem with that is when you lose money, then you're unhappy. If you know anything about this world, sometimes you get it, and sometimes you lose it, and generally you have very little control over it. And get this, you know what I discovered? Sometimes you can get it, and still it won't make you happy. So I thought love, like a woman, would make me happy. You know, I looked after a woman. Or sex would make, you know what? Because sometimes I would have sex or have a woman, and you know what? I would be happy. But, you know, sometimes, you ever been in relationships around here? Sometimes you can be in a relationship and make you really unhappy. Sometimes you can be unhappy out of relationship or in a relationship. And that does it, with or without money. And I invested 30 years of my life chasing after cars and women and money and this and travel to make myself happy. And I wound up a drunken slob and hurting everybody and myself, going nowhere. Just like you. Just like you. I worship that stuff. Don't talk to me about God. It was my God. If worship has to do with constantly thinking, wanting, longing for, praising, promoting, being the centerpiece of your life, hey, you Hefner, that's me. That material life was me. You know, listen, I was more an evangelical, you know, I'm basically, it doesn't mean you have to be, I'm a Christian. Okay, and I have a church life, and I have different lives. I was more Christian as far as materialism is. You understand? I was more evangelical. I was more fanatical about American Express, Playboy, money, and cars than any believer would be about any religion. And you want to know something? That life seemed normal to me. All my friends had that life. It seemed absolutely normal to me. You know what seemed really abnormal to me? All that believer crap. All those people that believe in God, you know? Now, one of the things I didn't understand about being an alcoholic is that when it says, unless an alcoholic accepts his devastating weakness, all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, if true happiness will find none at all, is that if you have the disease of alcoholism, it's more than just having a problem with drinking, which is a symptom of the disease. It's having a problem with sobriety. If you're sober, you're restless, you're irritable, your natural state as an alcoholic is to be uncomfortable and restless and lonely no matter what, because you're an alcoholic. Because somehow there's no connection there. And what it really is a spiritual disease. It's a lack of spiritual connection. You know, I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that deal at all. And so it says right here, it says, to them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. Now, here's the interesting thing. That's the life I led for 30 years, and it was disastrous. And as a result of that life, man, if the feelings I felt, you would drink too. And now here's the deal. I'm 62 years old. I've been married for 30 years. I couldn't keep a relationship going for 30 minutes. I've been married for 30 years to the same woman. Now, it's been a little rough. The first 28 years was pretty tough. You know what I mean? I admit it. But it's gotten better the last 24 months. I think it's going to be okay. You know? I've learned the secret of a long-standing relationship. She's always right and I'm always wrong. I plead guilty and I pay the fine and I shut up and I don't say anything. Except I'm sorry. You know? Or something like that. That's something like that. And I ignore 99% of the stuff that's going on around me. I have my sponsees say, did you hear what she just said? And I say, what? I just don't even pay attention. But that, by the way, that not only has to do with my wife. That has to do with everything. I ignore about 99%. But most of the stuff that's going on around me has nothing to do with me anyway. So here I am. I'm 62 years old. I have the same wife for 30 years. I've got 4 children that I've raised. You know, all of which are doing well, you know, emotionally and spiritually, as far as I can see. I've got 6 grandchildren. I'm self-supporting through my own contribution. I love life. I love the people around me. I have friends. You know what I mean? Sometimes I have money. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes things are good. It doesn't matter, because most of the time, regardless of my circumstances, I feel great. I've had cancer. I felt great. I've had hard times. I felt great. You know, I try to help people. And you want to know something? The major difference in my life besides not drinking is I've been for many years a believer in God. And my belief and my belief system and my relationship with God has gotten stronger and stronger and stronger. It's so strong. My whole life is about being here, talking to you about it, talking to other people about it, talking to my sponsor, my sponsees, going to church. Tomorrow night I'm speaking at Christ Fellowship. You know, some of you got that email and stuff like that. And being around doing this stuff and reading the Bible and going to Bible studies. Tomorrow morning I'll be at Thursday morning. And that's what's happening. And you ready for this? This is the weird thing. All this stuff that I do, which probably sounds insane to most alcoholics, even people not in here and stuff like that. To me, my life as a believer seems the only normal one. Seems absolutely normal to me. The only difference is I don't have to drink anymore, and I feel great about life most of the time, if not all the time. So you see, you just don't have to make a decision. You don't have to worry about this God thing. Here's the only thing you got to be. Don't worry, be concerned about this God thing, because people tell you it's bullshit and everything. This is the only thing you have to be concerned with. What do you want out of life? You see, what it says in the book, it says, if you want what we have and are willing to get any length to get it, and for an alcoholic, any length might be believing in a God that you can't see, that you can't stand, and you think it's bullshit. If you're willing to go any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So all you have to understand is, assuming that this is not a dress rehearsal, and this is it, and this is all you're being given to do with whatever you want, whether at the end of your days you want to look back and say, I had a great time, and I loved my life, and I was grateful for it, or whether you're one of the guys in the back room saying, I don't want to hear about this God crap, and walk around with a chip on your shoulder. And one of the things you're going to have to do is you're going to have to open up your eyes in Alcoholics Anonymous. And with all the talking, because I can tell you something, the atheists will talk the loudest. And because you're an alcoholic, one of the symptoms of being an alcoholic is we're all codependent. So what we are is accept me, I'll do anything, I'll prostitute myself, aholic. You know, when people come out of treatment, the first thing they say is, you know, they're telling you, you're going to die if you drink. You're going to die if you drink. You hang around drinkers, you're going to die, you're going to relapse. So the first thing they want to know is, well, what do I say if somebody pushes a drink on me? They need to know what to say. Now analyze that. Somebody's just told you your whole life depends upon you. It'll all be flushed down the toilet if you drink. And you need to have a cover story. I mean, you know, any self-respecting individual, if you came out of rehab and you knew you were going to drink and die and somebody pushed a drink at you, you'd hit him with a sledgehammer over the head. You'd say, what are you, crazy? But no. What do I say? We have to have a cover story, and here's the reason why. Because I feel so crappy about myself inside, no matter what I say. I feel like I'm such a piece of crap, not worthy to be alive or to even walk the planet, that you need to tell me something I can say to them so that I cannot take a drink and they will still like me and accept me. Because if you can't tell me something to say to them so they'll say, that's great, and like me and accept me, I'm going to have to take a drink, because I'd rather destroy myself and smoke that joint or snort that line or drink that drink than risk the possibility some jerk-off who doesn't even pay my visa bill might laugh at me. Because we feel so crappy about ourselves, and we don't even realize that's part of the problem. We hang around with people and we drink, but we don't know why. We go to certain places, we don't know why. We don't realize the effect. We don't realize it because, of course, we think we're better than it. We think because we operate under delusion because we're delusional. Here's what we say. Alcoholics say things like this. Delusion number one. I don't give a shit what people think about me. You ever say that? Well, I don't give a crap what she thinks about me. I don't care what they think about me. Now, let me give you a little clue. If you ever said that in your life, I don't care what they think about me, to anybody. People who really don't care about what other people think about them do not say, I don't give a shit what they think about me. They say stuff like pasta salt or you want a pizza, but they don't say that. You see, I've gotten to the point in my life where I can spot an alcoholic. I don't have to see you drink. Just the line. Just, I don't give a shit what they think about me. Who do they think they are? They don't know who they're dealing with. I said, I got a drinker. I don't care what you say. You're a drinker. No, I haven't had a drink in my life. You will. You know, you are. There ain't no question about it. You're one of us. Because it's a mindset. That's the thing that starts this drink. That's the uncomfortability. You might as well just say, pour me a brewski. You know what I mean? You understand what I'm talking about. That's the disease of alcoholism. So now we have the three lines. It says that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That no alcohol, no person could relieve us of our alcoholism. That God couldn't would if he were sought. And then it says right after that, it says, you ready for this? This is what it says. The next line, being convinced of those three things. Being convinced of those three things, we are now at step three. That's what it says. So let me ask you this. So you guys convinced of that? You doing okay? Okay. That we're alcoholics and could not manage our own lives. That's one of them, right? That this is what we're convinced that. That we're alcoholics. So what does it mean to manage? Anybody have an... What does it mean to manage? Manage. Does it mean you direct?
Direct.
It means you sort of like think about. You make moves. You make decisions. You plan out things. You know what I mean? You talk to other people about it and stuff like that. You know, what does it mean to manage something? Manage your life. You decide whether you go here or there and what you're going to do and what you're going to say and all that sort of stuff. It's like managing your life. So you guys don't do that. You don't do that. You don't do that. You don't worry about that. You don't do that. You don't talk about that. You see, here's what the deal says. We're alcoholic and we cannot manage our own lives. We cannot manage our own lives. And you walk out of an AA meeting, and then you spend the next 24 hours doing all you can to manage your life and try to figure out why it all turns to shit when you're violating the first principle. So now you're going to say to me something like this, well, that makes no sense whatsoever. Well, of course, you have to understand God's stuff makes no sense to people who think their lives will be set right if they only have the right girl or guy or they have money or if they think, you know, it doesn't make any sense because it's a spiritual thing. It's that which is non-material. It doesn't make any sense. But when you read the book Alcoholics Anonymous, what you realize is that alcoholics do perfectly well if they don't manage their own life, if they allow God to manage their life for them, and they stick within God's will. But then you say, how do you do that? I'd say, well, I guess you'd have to know what God's will is. I guess you'd have to know a little something about God. You know, how would you not learn something about China? I guess I'd talk to China. I guess I'd study up on China. I'd read books about China. You know, I'd say, China, how you doing? Where's China today? What's going on with China? Be interested in China, right? Well, how do you find out about it? I guess you'd be interested in the God thing. You'd do the same thing with God. You'd be interested in it. You'd be focused in on it. It says God could and would if he was sought. If he was sought, that means you got to seek him. How do you seek God if you're sitting in the back of an A room saying, I don't want to hear that shit? So let's read. With that in mind, let me read a couple of things and then get back to that for a second. Okay? This is... talk about this guy. Okay, here it is. Page 25. We have found much of heaven and we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we have not even dreamed. We have found much of heaven and we've been rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. Now, I suggest to you that finding much of heaven and being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed is different than just not drinking. Would you agree with that? Now, If you're not interested in finding heaven and being rocketed into the fourth dimension of which you had not even dreamed, then you don't really even need to listen to the rest of this deal. Because you're just a member of the not drinking club. You know, you're just in the not drinking club. And that'll last for a little while and then you'll be drinking again because the not drinking club never lasts because who wants to not drink when you're miserable? When it's not, it's like being in prison. Okay. The great fact for us is this and just nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, the central fact of our lives today, and sometimes they call it the great fact, the central fact of our lives today. You know, as I read this, I want you to ask yourself this question. You don't have to answer it. Is God the central fact of your life today? Is God all you think about? Do you find yourself always thinking about God? Do you find yourself praying to God? Do you thank you? Do you find yourself saying things like, God is great? You know, I wish I could know God better. Do you pray to God? Do you read books about God? Do you talk to other people about God? Are the people you hanging around talking about God, or are they talking about bullshit? Is God the central factor of your life today, or is it just something you hear about in AA meetings that you'd rather not hear about because it makes you nervous? And you want to talk about the stuff that most people are talking about at AA meetings. You know what an AA meeting is? It's the same thing that goes on in bars today, except they're drinking beer, and we're drinking coffee. Most of the alcoholics in AA, you know what they want to talk about? They want to talk about the same stuff they were talking about when they were sitting in bars. They just want to talk about it and drink coffee. And every once in a while, throw in a step. You know, that's what they want to do. Just listen to some of the talk in AA meetings, what people are saying and what they're chatting about. They don't want to talk about this stuff. God forbid somebody should talk about God. You know what I'm talking about? They just sort of beat them up. And if you're new in AA, you start thinking that you're going to be beat up if you talk about God. So you know what you do? You don't talk about him because you want to be cool. And you want to fit in because, after all, we do want people to love us. You know, what do I say if they ask me what I want to drink? Well, I know one thing. You can't talk about God in AA, so I'm not going to talk about it because it's bad. And most people don't really read the book and study the book. They just believe that whatever they hear in AA is what's in the book. But what you hear in AA is what you hear in the fellowship. And the fellowship will always, always be counter to the book because our nature is, as chapter in the agnostic, to have hackles against and rise against God and not want to hear God. That's what it says in the book. So if you get a group of alcoholics together and you talk about what's in this book about God, you can bet that 80% are going to say, we don't want to hear that crap. But that's the disease. That's not the recovery. But if you didn't know that, if you don't understand that, if you don't experience that, you will think that that's the recovery. And you'll start mistaking the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous for the book and for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, where it says we lose prejudice even against organized religion. These guys weren't prejudiced against religion at all. Bill Wilson, the guy who brought the thing in Bill Wilson, he said, he told me about a simple religious idea. It wasn't poison to them or terrible to them. The great fact is just this and nothing less. The central factor of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. At the end of the promises, it says the same thing. He is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Who are they talking about? Who is he? I don't know who he is, but you know, I'll tell you what, I'd like to get to know him, whoever that guy is. Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as those have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. Phenomena is a scientific word for miracles. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding force of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. How about this one? We, in turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. That's not me. That's our book. A new life has been given us, or for if you prefer, a design for living that really works. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are honest enough to try. A living Creator which we may form a relationship. Listen to the word relationship. Well, can a doorknob be your higher power? Well, I suppose it can if you believe you were created by a doorknob. But if you're just using the doorknob to get away from that which the book is telling you to do, when that is believe in God, then I guess you're just not willing and open-minded to do this program, and you're just playing games and making believe. Further on, clear-cut directions are showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual. Am I an individual? Yeah. In the personal stories, this is my personal story, describes from his own language, this is my language, and from his own point of view, this is my point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. That's what an AA story is all about. It's supposed to be you just talking about, not your drinking. You can talk about your drinking, your drunkalog. What AA is about is talking about how you establish your relationship with God. That's what it's about. In most AA meetings these days, if you start talking about that, people not only don't want to hear it, they shout you down. They say, talk about drinking. This is not about drinking. Accepting the identity. This is about finding God and not drinking and discovering the joy of living. Many of us have been so touchy that even casual reference to spiritual things made us bristle with antagonism. This sort of thinking had to be abandoned, gotten rid of. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of fellows. They retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us, seemingly without provocation. We invariably find that at some point in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So are you ready for this? Selfishness, self-centeredness, that is the root of our troubles. That's the root of our troubles. If you're an alcoholic, you're selfish, and you're self-centered on your best days. Above everything, you know what? That's not me talking. That's AA. That's what the book says. If you're an alcoholic, the root of your trouble is being selfish and self-centered. Now, you may say to me, this is what you say to me, and you may say, well, I don't think that's right. Tell me, I don't think that's right.
I don't think that's right.
Well, unfortunately for you, you've just proved my point. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. Now, what do you think about that? I don't think that's right.
I don't think that's right.
Though he usually doesn't think so. I nailed you. Okay? Above everything else, us alcoholics have to be rid of that selfishness. We must, or it kills us, which is like a bad thing. You know what I mean? You got to get rid of it or it'll kill you. Now, you know how to stop drinking. Now, how are you going to get rid of the selfishness? How are you going to get rid of thinking about you all the time? I know what you're thinking about. You're thinking about you, aren't you? I know what you're thinking. What are you thinking about? You're thinking about you. You're thinking about how long this thing's going to last so you can do something. You're thinking about how you don't like this. What are you thinking about? You're thinking about you, aren't you? You know, it's like that movie Beaches. Enough about me. What about you? What do you think about me? You know? How do we get rid of this selfishness? It says, God makes that possible. So if you don't believe in God, if you don't have a relationship, it ain't going to be possible for you. You may stay sober physically, but you're going to always be thinking about yourself. And that's going to lead to restlessness, irritability, loneliness. It's going to lead to 20 years sober and not sponsor anybody because nobody wants what you have. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would like to. You know, the moral physical, it says it in chapter Agnostic. If a mere code of ethics would have gotten us better, we would have discovered, you know, do the next right thing. That's a code of ethics. Do the Ten Commandments. Do the next right thing. It didn't work for us. Neither could we do self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decide that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. Listen, here's the formula. Next, we decide that here and after in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. He's the main guy. We are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple. You get it? Simple. God's the main guy. He's the center. He is everything. You're the agents. You're here to do his bidding. You're here to do his will. I'm not asking you to like it. I understand why you can't like when you realize that you're God, but you're not. You got to quit playing God. That's the whole point. You got to quit playing God. Most good ideas are simple, and the concept was the keystone. This is the key of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. You all want freedom, don't you? Freedom from fear. Freedom from worried about what other people think about you. Freedom from fear of money. You want the Apostle Paul stuff that he talked about, learn to be content in all things, rich or poor. You know what you see about old-timers in AA who really have this thing? You realize when you look at them and they're steady and people go around them, you know why they go around them? Because they're always the same. They look like they could be dying of cancer. They look like they don't even have a problem. They're interested in you. They're at peace with themselves. And you say, I'm all over the place. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. Old Charlie is the same all the time. He's always got a smile on his face. What is going on? You think he has $1 million in the bank. You think he doesn't. And then all of a sudden you hear all sorts of problems these guys have and all sorts of situations that they're going through. And all you're doing is you're a thumb-sucking crybaby saying, oh, my wife did this or my brother did that. And it's all a bunch of whining and crying and gnashing of teeth. And there's some old guy in the room who's got 20, 30 years and he's never He's never pissed off or crying or whining or talking about other people behind their back at all. And he feels good about most of the time. He's interested in you trying to help other people and say, what's his secret? There's no secret. This is the deal. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all powerful. It isn't a higher power. It's the highest power. He's all powerful. Unless you want one of them dinky gods, you know, for dinky problems. I wanted the real deal. The guy, you know what I mean? I didn't want like some assistant God, deputy assistant God, you know? He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. You got to keep close to him and perform his work well. Do you know if you keep close to God and perform his work well, you'll never get into trouble. Never get into trouble. The only time I hear guys get into trouble is when they don't keep close to him and perform his work well. They'll say things like this. Oh, I'm going to go get that girl. I like that girl. I said, is that a God thing? You know, he said, God wants me to get that girl. You know what I mean? It's all, they'll always get into trouble when they're going after stuff that you don't, you just sort of know it ain't a God thing. It's like a penis thing or something, you know? It's like one of those deals. I mean, we're big boys and girls. That's where they get themselves in trouble. It's a materialistic thing. It's a sex thing. It's a lust thing. It's a thing that drove us before we got in here, and that's when they get into trouble. And it's like we sit around coming in here picking up another white chip saying, I can't understand why it happened. Well, because your focus wasn't the central fact. It wasn't the central fact. The central fact in your life was still, I hate to say it, the vagina, the penis, whatever the hell it is, the money, the car. It's still the same crap. You never got sober. You never got this program. You were just a drunk that was just interested in his loins and just interested in money and sex and all the crap that drove you, and you didn't change it all. You just changed the bar that you were drinking in, and you drank coffee for a while. Laughing at and making fun of the people that were actually doing this thing. Childish. While babies, while children are going without fathers and mothers. Because unfortunately they have mothers and fathers who are alcoholics. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, whoever he is, but I'll tell you what, if I was you, I'd find out. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. We thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Now that's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the book Alcoholics Anonymous. Is that what you hear in AA today in the fellowship? Or do you hear, I don't want to hear that God crap? Even from guys from 10 to 15 years, you better listen up because your life depends upon it. And don't be led astray by people that feel uncomfortable about God and really don't want to do this. And so they only feel comfortable if they gather up their people around them to believe the way they believe, so they don't want to have to actually do this thing. This is your life. This is important. I'm going to read a couple more things. I'm going to skip over. It says, see to it your relationship with him is right. With him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Page 98. Now I'm all the way to working with others. It is not a matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. This often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcohol commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn the truth. Here's the truth. You want to hear the truth? Job or no job? Wife or no wife? Anybody here looking for a job? Anybody here looking for a wife? Yeah. 3 years from now, you're going to find one. You're going to be complaining about her. Wife or no wife? We simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. He's the central part of our lives. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. I don't know, you think this God thing is important in Alcoholics Anonymous? You talk about it a lot at meetings? They get mad at people that talk about God at meetings? You ever wonder why that's about, why that happens? You know what that is? That's the sickness. That's the sickness. That's the disease. Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect, just like I'm reminding you. Just like I'm reminding you. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It's dependent upon his relationship with God. I mean, don't get mad at me. I'm just a messenger. I'm just reading this. I'm just reading it right out of the book. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation. How about this? It says, he will show you, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. He's going to even show you, if you're in line with him and he's the centerpiece, he's going to show you who the hell you should be hanging out with. You're going to be hanging out with some people and you're going to feel like you're right in the stream of things and you're exactly where you're going to be and life is going to be great, and you're going to be hanging out with other people that something inside of you, some gyroscopic sickness inside of you is going to say, I need to hang out with these people, and your life is going to go down the tubes and you'll never know why. Because you're not looking at him, you're looking at Sally, you know, Swiss cheese over here. You know what I mean? Because unless you're focused on him and his things and what's going on with him and who he is in your life, you're going to be going over here. Because you're attracted like a moth to a flame over here. Because that's the nature of the disease of alcoholism. When did I make the decision? You know, some, I don't know when I made the decision. When did I make the decision for God? Or did I make it every single day? Was it December 25th, 1980, when I heard an evangelist, a Jewish kid from New York, here's an evangelist on TV, and I was all alone, I drunk everything away from my life, and I lost everything in my self-respect, and I got down on my knees and I asked Jesus to come into my life, which is a pretty big deal for a Jewish kid. You understand what I'm saying? Was that when I made my decision? I continued to drink after that. I'm just telling you, I did. How about in the hospital 2 weeks later, when I looked up and I was on a gurney and I said, God help me. Was that when I made the decision? I don't know. How about when I was sitting in that AA meeting and I got up and I picked up that white chip and I walked out? Is that when I made the decision? How about when I asked my sponsor to sponsor me, and he gave me my little black book, and he said, this is what I want you to do. I want you to get on your knees and ask God's help to stay sober every day. I want you to read the 24-hour book every day, and I want you to call me before you take any drink. When for 15 years, I got on my knees, and I asked God's help to stay sober, and I read that 24-hour book. Is that when I made the decision? Is that when I made the decision? When he told me, when I got to the third step, when I went to my first AA meeting, and I put up my hands and I said, Lord, prayer. And I said to my sponsor, I said, well, I don't know whether I want to do that. He says, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't know whether I believe in God. He said, too late. He says, hypocrite, if hypocrite is saying one thing and doing another, you broke hypocrite a long time ago, okay? Fake it until you make it. Was when I held hands and said the Lord's Prayer, was that a decision for God? I think so. You know, when I said the Serenity Prayer at the end, did that count? I think so. When my sponsor said to me, we're going to do the third step, and he told me to go into my, and do the third step, and I went into my bedroom, and I went into my bathroom, and I locked the door, and I got down on my knees, and I said the third step prayer, because I didn't want anybody walking in on me, hearing me say, was that when I made the decision? You know, when I came here tonight, and I talked about God to you, is that when I made the decision? When I go to Bible study tomorrow morning, and I talk about God, and I hang out with, is that when I make a decision? Do I make that decision every day? I make it every day. I make it every second of the day. I decide who I'm going to hang out with and who I'm not going to hang out with. What I talk about and what I don't talk about. What comes out of my mouth, what doesn't come. What I'm going to think about and what I'm not going to allow myself to think about. What I'm going to watch, what I'm not going to watch. What I'm going to believe. Who's making the decisions? I'm making those decisions. I'm making those decisions. What has it done for me? Has it changed me and my relationship, made my relationship and my faith stronger? Absolutely. Has my life gotten better? Unbelievably. Does everybody agree with that? No. Does it matter to me that they agree with it? No. Am I going to talk about it anyway? Yes. You know why? Because in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, which is Bill Dotson's story, Bill Wilson said the following. I want to read you a little bit about this. It would be hard, this is Bill Dodson talking, Alcoholics Anonymous number 3. Then we'll close it up. It would be hard to estimate how much AA has done for me. I really wanted the program, and I wanted to go along with it. I noticed that others seemed to have such a release, a happiness, a something I thought a person ought to have. I was trying to find the answer. I knew there was even more, something I hadn't got. And I remember one day, a week or two after I come out of the hospital, Bill Wilson, was at my house talking to my wife and me. We were eating lunch, and I was listening and trying to find out why he had this release that they seemed to have. He was trying to find the secret. Any of you guys want to know the secret? Don't you sort of say, gee, well, I wish I was sponsored by Bill Wilson. If only Bill Wilson was here. Well, here's the guy telling you what happened. He said, we were listening, trying to find out why he had this release, and they seemed to have. Bill looked across at my wife and said to her, Henrietta, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I just want to keep on talking about it and telling other people. I think I have the answer. Bill was very, very grateful that he had been released from this terrible thing, and he had given God the credit for having done it. And he's so grateful about it, he wants to tell other people about it. That sentence, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I just want to keep on telling people about it, has been a sort of golden text for the AA program and for me. And is that the way you feel, or do you worry about talking about God? Do you lack the courage to talk about God? And I can understand that. Is that the way you feel? Or do you feel, you know, that, do you feel the way Bill Wilson felt? Because of the fear? Because you're worried about what some slug next to you in the name meeting is going to think about you? Because you don't really have that relationship yet. You don't have that relationship yet. It's not real for you. It's not there. You feel like you're alone. You feel you'll get pushed down. You feel that, God forbid, somebody in AA won't like you. Oh my God. Might as well kill yourself. People in AA are making fun of you. Alcoholics don't like you. Oh my God, a fate worse than death. Can you imagine? Where do I go to get the courage to stand on principle and talk about what's really going on inside of me and be a man and a woman and an adult and not a child? Where do I go to get that deal? Where can I find that? It's all over AA. The other stuff is all over AA too. They talk about it in the book, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they talk about that, and I'm gonna end by saying this one line, because we've talked a lot about God, and I hope I can find it. I think I can. Perhaps there is a better way. We'll end with this line. When you talk about courage, you might have people say, gee, I wish I had courage to talk like that in AA meeting. And I understand I got 30 years. I feel obligated to do it. I mean, I got to understand, because I know a person with 1 year is scared. I know a person with 10 years is scared. I know they're scared. I got 30 years. I know they can't kick me out of here. They can't. They can't. AA can't do anything to you. They can't do a thing to you. You know? And if you wrote him a letter and you said, hey, there's an old-timer here, he's killing newcomers, he's talking about God, they wouldn't do anything. They're not going to do anything with it anyway. You know what I mean? So I'm going to talk about it every chance I can get, because there's a possibility I might actually save somebody out there by talking about it, okay? Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in a world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. Just to the extent that you do the things I'm talking about and rely on him, you will find peace and happiness. And to the extent you don't, you never will. So do what the heck you want. It's your life. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon God. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness. Paradoxically, is a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. Did you know that? All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. They say it again. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Hey, let me ask something. Any of you guys ever anxious or afraid of anything? You ever find yourself worrying about anything? Ever? Money? Anything? What would your life be like if you never worried or were anxious about anything? What if you never had the thought, why did he say that? What does he think? What's going to happen? Well, would your life be a little bit better? You don't want that deal? You don't want that deal. You just want the not drinking thing, right? That's all you don't want that other deal. You don't want the rocketed fourth dimension, you know, much of heaven, all that deal. You know, the other deal is available to you. You don't ever have to think the way you're thinking or worry the way you worry or deal with life the way you deal with life. You know, it could be like smooth sailing, even the roughest storm. All you have to do is pay attention to what they're actually talking about in this book. Thank you very much.